Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast, a podcast about board games and board games and board games. And I am joined today by Pip.
Hello.
And we just spent quite a long time playing a board game. I don't know about you, but I'm pretty sleepy. It was quite a sedentary, slow game that we're going to talk about in a little bit.
How dare you?
Oh, that's...
But it was also fulfilling. So like a pie, I would say. It makes you sleepy. You need the post-pie nap.
Is that the sort of aim of this episode of the podcast? Is to produce a sort of board game pie in audio form that our listeners may nibble on and then nap afterwards?
Yes, a somnolent podcast.
That's such a good word.
Tomnolent.
A tomnolent podcast. On this podcast, we are going to talk about Moon River, a game about being cowboys doing dominoes. But in a way, that kind of sounds like some sort of gambling seedy saloon activity. This isn't that. It's just placing big dominoes on a board. It's the latest in the King Domino system, and we just played it. After that, we're going to talk about Gin, a game about running around a little tiny town, collecting little spirits and popping them into bottles. The bestest.
That is D-J-I-N-N, yep. For anybody who is just thinking, oh, hang on, a game about bottles. But yes.
Yeah, putting gin into bottles. You'd think this is sort of some sort of distillery-based game, but no, it's a spirit-based game.
That doesn't clarify.
Pip, we just played a game of Moon River, the latest in the King Domino system, designed by Bruno Cathala and Johan Cervais. Please tell the folks at home about this little game.
So, you'll be able to speak to the similarities or differences with the other games in the King Domino extended universe, the cinematic. Whatever.
The Omino legacy.
Yeah. But for people like me who had not played any of that before, I will just lay out what goes on. So you have the beginnings of a ranch / settlement / some kind of thing, and you are going to be collecting different types of terrain and building them out from your base. You are given these sort of halves of a domino, and you slot them together and decide where you are going to place them in order to maximize your points. How do you earn said points? I hear you ask. I don't. This is a podcast. You could be talking to me
now. I could say.
Oh, yeah.
But how do you get those points?
Ah, well, you've got these amazing little tiles. Tiles? You've got these amazing little meeples called cows.
Ah.
Meeples, in fact.
Oh, that's too good. That's not what they're called in the game, is it?
No.
They missed a trick.
That was off the dome.
If the people at Blue Orange Games paid your frankly exorbitant day rate of £9,999,999 per minute, then they could have such killer puns as Mooples.
They could. Anyway, yeah. So Mooples. You use your Mooples as multipliers. See, this is where it all falls apart. The day rate comes crashing down.
That's perfect. The sort of board of directors looking at you going, yes, keep going.
I think that we may be diverging from the rules explanation. So to recap for people who have got lost already.
You get Mooples multipliers.
You are placing two plots of land at a time in a board. You've got a player grid that's 5x5 or 5x10 if you are playing two-player, which we were. And these terrains, you are trying to place them with similar terrains touching. Obviously, that's actually like a rule. You have to have similar terrains touching after the first ones have been placed. But you want to get like big zones out of these little plots of land of all the same terrain type. Then you only get to score them if you have living cows on them at the end of the game. Each cow means that you get one lot of the number of tiles in that zone as points. So 0 cows, 0 points. 1 cow, 1 lot of the amount of tiles in that zone. 2 cows, you can see where I'm going with this.
I can see.
Well, it's a shame that you couldn't when we were actually playing, isn't it?
You'd be quiet.
But when I said living cows, that was an important element.
Tell us about death.
Because in the game, when you place these tiles, you also have to pay attention to little icons on them, as is the way of video games and board games. I mean board games, but we played this in a video game format. Anyway.
I made the same slip up on the last podcast. We need to stop doing this.
Yeah. What is wrong with both? I mean, I work in board video, get both of them. Anyway. to get back to the subject at hand. These tiles will have different iconography on them. So some of them will have corn icons. Some of them will have beavers. Some of them will have skulls. Some of them will have little outlines of cows. And in order to maximize the profits on your land, you are going to want to pay attention to the interactions of those things. So for the types of resources that there are, so the beavers, the corn, and the nuggets of gold, they are going to be worth whatever the amount of them is at the end of the game. You can then multiply that by having people who are skilled in whatever that thing is. So for the beavers, it would be a fur trapper. But the other three icons that I mentioned, they resolve in order. So if there is an outline of a cow, you get a cow on that space. Isn't that lovely? A
it's
living,
lovely.
Breathing friend.
What could happen to them?
If there is a skull.
No, don't tell me.
Tom.
No.
Oh, Bessie is
no.
gone.
Bessie!
Gone.
Oh.
I know, right?
I was feigning surprise there, but this is a familiar feeling to me as all of my cows perished in this game, really. I was not good at placing these tiles in a way that left any living herds on my board. It was anarchy. It was horrible. We'll get to that in a moment. I just wanted to flag that I was quite bad at placing my tiles and keeping my cows alive.
Yeah, you were. So you go cows, death, and then people tokens. So that's the big circles that I was talking about, because you get to essentially recruit help from the tavern. So that would be the people who do the multipliers on the resources that I mentioned. You also can get a cattle thief, which will steal another player's unguarded cow. And there are a few more. So one will like swap unplaced pieces from your board with another player's. There's one more, isn't there, Tom?
Yeah.
What
was the last one?
Think of it.
Cow stealer.
Anyway.
Cow swapper. Cow mover.
Cow mover. Well, so on the back of each and every one of those is a picture of a cowboy riding into a sunset. And
it's very beautiful.
You can play them that side up to move your cows around to try and help with the multiplier situation. You got quite fortunate in that regard. I was entirely miffed, but
we
can go into that. Yes, but I wanted to win by so many points that you felt demoralized rather than lightly bruised.
That's a very Quentin Smith way of looking at things, to be quite honest. not enough that you win, but you must win by a lot.
Yeah, you have to grind the other person into dust.
Exactly.
The one thing that I will point out, because it might segue us into some discussion neatly, is that you have to pay close attention to the order of the cows, the death, and the people in order to make good decisions as opposed to terrible decisions that leave you with a massive red desert absolutely devoid of life.
I feel like I'm being atted, targeted, harassed here for my big red desert that I worked really hard on.
So what happens is, so the death is in the form of a drought. And so if you play a drought icon, these skulls, these cow skulls, into your area before you place a domino there that has a cow, it means the drought has happened before the cow was even born and therefore does not affect them. It does not kill that cow. What a lovely, lovely time to be alive. Tom, when I explained that part of the
I think I was resting. I was resting my eyes and brain and ears all at once.
Were you shouting, into the microphone from across the room?
I killed a lot of cows in this game. So the thing is, I was in such a mode of being like, essentially what I was doing for the whole game was building out a big red desert, as alluded to earlier. And I was just hoping for eventually a cow to show up, and when one did show up, I would immediately kill it with the skull icons, because I was very bad at managing what tiles, because the way that you pull tiles from this display is you sort of pull them into a little hopper and then you can sort of dispense them from your personal hopper onto the board. But if you get left with like tiles that are bad for your board, you're just probably gonna have to place them in some slightly irritating and confusing way. And so I kept building out this massive territory, but it was just huge and completely useless for the entire game, until right at the end, where I managed to sort of use a cowboy to ferry a couple of cows onto the grid. I want to get my point out the way first, which is that, so this is a game that is using the King Domino system to sort of expand and change, and it's another one of these spin-offs. We had King Domino, then we had Queen Domino, then we had King Domino Origins. I'm sure there's another kind of King Domino related game.
I mean, surely King Domino's Origins are pretty straightforward, unless there was a coup.
It was King Domino. I mean, these origins stretched all the way back to prehistory. It was King Domino Dinosaur Edition, maybe. I don't know if there were any dinosaurs. There were definitely cavemen. Yes, I know, they didn't happen at the same time, but that means the Flintstones wasn't real. So shut it.
So tell me about the domino system and how it relates here.
So basically the big difference between Moon River and other games in this domino series is that the dominoes, they come pre-dominoed, essentially. You don't assemble a domino, you just take one that already exists. And they're randomized, so that you're always getting two different kinds of terrain at any given time, but you don't get any sort of choice over how you assemble them. You just plonk them down onto your board. And I believe, it's been a long time since I've played those games, you don't actually put anything, any little meeples onto your board of any sort. It's just about making big areas of territory. So all the game is focused in on is the sort of like the draft, which has this sort of clever system where the higher up you put your person taking a tile in the draft, you're going to be the first to take next time, essentially. It has that clever turn order system, and it has an area majority make a little grid thing, and it's also much, 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 much quicker. This game, I think partly due to the Board Game Arena implementation being quite slow and quite clunky, took us quite a long time to play. I think that was definitely exacerbated by the two-player game being double the length of the regular game, because you're making a 5x10 grid rather than a 5x5. But at the same time, I don't entirely love the extra systems they've added on top of that core. I think King Domino is like really like peppy and fast and like a really good little filler game, and that's why people like it. I don't entirely know if this needs all the sort of stuff that's been added on top. The main way that you're scoring points in this game is that system of those cows, which is like, you know, shuffling them around onto certain parts of your board so that you actually get those area scoring bonuses in the first place. But there was lots of like slightly weird stuff going on that felt a little bit out of player control, to do with snatching cows from other people. And that might be to do with the fact that our first setup of tiles was all cow stealing tiles. All of the first set we got were ones that let you steal. So that was an ever-present thing throughout the game. But there were a couple times where And I suppose that it's the kind of thing that it's a risk you're taking, right? Is when you're choosing to go last in turn order, you are opening yourself up to someone taking a loose cow. But that happened a few too many times to me for my liking. And that might just be me being bitter and irritated that I left my cows undefended for so long. But there were definitely a few turns where I couldn't have done anything to have protected what I had. It was just the way the tiles got dealt out. Definitely put me at the receiving end of some stealing, which felt like it was a bit of an uphill struggle. And that was another thing with Board Game Arena, it having a visible points tally that whole game made me feel very demoralized as your score just crept up and up and up. And as my cows left my fields or left my big red rock canyon, I just became more and more morose and sad.
I mean, does it help if you reframe that as, I wasn't stealing your cows, I was removing them to a safe area so that you couldn't kill them by accident.
That's true. That's also very true. I did spend a lot of time killing my cows. And also, they didn't really seem to... I can't imagine they enjoyed the red desert as their natural habitat when the green fields of your board were ready and waiting to take them under your wing.
Well, I mean, one lives and learns unless one is a cow in Tom's care. I would say that I think I enjoyed it more than you, and partly that is because my first experience of it wasn't the BGA implementation where
it was table style.
You are waiting 15 minutes for it to rotate through 90 degrees. So that there is that, I will say. But also I think that the additions that I think for you take it from this zippy little filler game into a chunkier thing are the things that I enjoy about games like Karuba, or you know, where you are looking at your own board trying to make optimal decisions. It's not quite Karuba, because there are points where I did absolutely on purpose screw you over.
Yes.
So there was a point where I saw that you were going to get a person that would help you out if you placed one of your tiles that had a circle on. So I just picked up the cowboy helper who would swap tiles, and so I gave you, I do believe, a death bringing desert tile.
An even worse desert, an even drier, dustier desert that killed the one solitary cow that was living there. It was depressing.
I have no regrets.
But I do think, though, that's definitely like a difference in what people might be looking for in this kind of game, where I think that, like, one of my favorite things is when a game that is simple is so simple that it lets you really focus on what your opponent is doing and try and maneuver the game in a way that will irritate them. And that's definitely something that is in King Domino a lot, is like trying to manipulate that really simple draft to make it so that your opponent ends up with something that they can't place or don't want to place or really annoyed that they have to place. And I think that this game has that, but it also has a lot of other systems on top of it that there's not this isn't a really complicated game. It's really simple. You can explain the whole rules of it in a few minutes. But I do think that it takes those systems, take it from a game where you can put all of your focus and attention into, you know, deliberately messing with your opponent, into something where you instead have to devote half of your brain to, you know, working out how you can put a field next to a rock and not scream.
So I actually found it a lot easier doing the BGA thing in one respect, and that is the keeping track of scoring, because it is just phenomenally difficult to keep an accurate running score in your head when you are playing it just on a tabletop. You've moved one cow and therefore like the whole scoring system goes out of the window and you have to recalculate a bunch of things. And I will say that, like, even though it took less time than the two-player game that takes up, you know, a larger space on the table, what happened when we were playing in person is everybody spent, I think, you know, whole minutes at the end, you know, possibly about 10 minutes in total, like all just staring at boards, like yes. trying to figure out what was the optimal way of placing these things and potentially using any remaining cowboys to move cows to get optimal results, which it's not a case of, oh, well, if I move this cow here, I straight up get an extra 7 points. It's like, well, if I move that, then I lose this number of points because it's no longer applying this multiplier. So then I'm going to do that subtraction from the net, from the gain, and sort of, so it's, you're dealing with net results rather than like just absolute profit. Yes, I suppose. Yes.
Yeah, it's a, I had a nice time playing Moon River, but I wouldn't seek out playing it again. I think it's, I just think that I would rather the simplicity of a game like, it's one of those things where I don't think it has enough meat on the bone to justify a longer game, but it also isn't simple enough to replace something like King Domino or Queen Domino for people who really like that, which puts it in a weird position. But where does it land for you?
Yeah, I think I benefited by not having any, oh, this is what I expect yeah. from a King Domino system game. And so I very much went into it as thinking it will be, oh, a cerebral, you know, tile placement thing, just where I nibble away at it with little strategies of my own. And I think it was a lot more satisfying on that front. It's not, it hasn't like vaulted over anything else in that space to become a thing that I must obtain, though.
Sure.
Yeah, so I think that's where I've ended up with it. Like, it's cozy enough and it's meaty enough for me to happily play it in company.
Yeah,
so I'd say it's that.
It's that kind of game. You know them. You've got them. Maybe get this one. The next game we're going to talk about on this podcast is a game called Djinn, spelled D-J-I-N-N, designed by Benjamin Schwer and published by Hall Games and Pegasus Spiele. This is sort of a medium weight Euro game in which between 1 and 4 players are going to be running around a tiny little town trying to capture spirits who are boogieing around town every day and every night, whilst building up sort of an engine for doing so by recruiting various wizards to their cause. This is sort of a worker placement game in a way, but one where you only have one worker, and that worker is kind of on a linear, not a track, but a sort of central hub board that they're going to be visiting various spaces of. They can only move in one of two directions at any given time, going from these sort of nodes in this weird tangle of spots in the middle of this board. It's quite hard to explain, but I'll have it as the podcast thumbnail so you can visualize
it. They are scuttling around a city.
You can't, like, teleport from one side to the other of this city, though. You have to go one space at a time. Maybe that's the best way to explain it. You have all these different spaces that you can visit, and they all do different things. You have academy spaces that get you some magic power. You've got tavern spaces that let you recruit mages to go and sit beside your player board. You've got catacombs, which get you chests, which have little special bonuses of money or scrolls or other resources. You've got archives that let you upgrade different actions. You've got the manufactory that lets you equip your wizard with staffs and coats and cloaks that make you more powerful. And you've got a market that lets you buy all kinds of flasks and bottles and corks that you're going to capture these spirits with. And let's talk about that, because that's maybe the most important part of the game, is that as you go around this little worker placement board collecting resources and doing bits and bobs, you'll sometimes land on spaces that have these spirits on them. And what you ultimately want to do in this game is collect those spirits, because having sets of 3 of them will get you a load of points and a little bonus, if I remember correctly. But to capture those spirits, you first need a glass bottle to put them in and a cork to stopper them afterwards, which I think is absolutely delightful. In order to capture the spirit, you're going to need magic power, which you'll get by having some of it in your reserves, but also by the wizards that you got earlier. Wizards that you get by paying them in scrolls and money, and you can see how these all these different resource economies kind of roughly fit together into this thing where first you need wizards, because they're going to cast the spell to capture a spirit, but you're also going to need a bottle and a cork to put them in afterwards. And once you collect a set of three, you're going to get some points. You also have these boss djinn, which are wild, and they're going to be extra difficult to catch. But if someone catches all the smaller djinn in the area before they catch the big one, then it'll scuttle away and vanish from the board. Once all six of those big bosses are either captured or they've run away, that triggers the end of the game, and you're going to score points based on all kinds of different things that you get in all kinds of point salary ways. That's a really rough overview of how djinn works. I won't get into the specifics because there's lots of weird little details and strangeness going on here, but it's a fairly simple, like, straightforward teach. What I want to get into is how I think this game has lots of really nice, weird little details that I think make it a slightly better than average Euro game, because the feeling of this game, of actually playing it, like the core mechanics of it, the maths of it, the kind of calculations you're doing, they're going to be pretty similar to anyone who's played one of these kinds of games before. But I think that there's lots of nice little subtleties to the game that are very sweet and make it kind of quite inviting to play. So, for instance, the bottles and the corks are just delightful sets of components. You have these weird little color-coded bottles that you're going to put your djinn inside of, and that's just sweet. But also, your player board has all these little flippable, toggleable, slidable little bits that you're going to sort of build out over the course of the game. So you put your mages in their sort of little mage annex that sits at the bottom of your board. You keep your keys and your scrolls and your gold and these little treasuries that are on your board. You've got this little socket where you sort of build out your mage, which is really cute and delightful. And you've got these secret passages that come off your board that you place on the main board that give you access to bonus actions. There's also this really sweet little mechanic at the start of the game where you almost choose your character. You have these positive and negative traits that you combine two of to make a sort of custom character for that game. And these aren't crazy. They'll just change the way that you play the game slightly. So a positive characteristic might make it so that you're the cork guy. You're going to get loads of extra corks whenever you visit the cork manufacturer. What a cool and quirky character you are. But your disadvantage might be that you're really scared of the boss djinn or something, and they cost you extra magic to get. And so that's a really rough overview of what this game is like. I think it's real pleasant, but I want to know what you thought of it, Pip.
So, do you want to know what my positive and negative was? I've just found a picture of it while I was thinking about the game.
Oh, yeah.
My positive was, after opening a treasure chest, because this game has treasure chests.
It does.
I got to keep the key. So that made me a bit of a treasure gremlin.
A plunderer.
And then my negative trait was, draw a random equipment card from the bottom of any deck. So I ended up with, because on one side of the board, you are, you're essentially playing like top, middle and bottom, building out a character. So you
is
have
it like, is it called Exquisite Corpse? That thing where
you fold
a drawing over three times. Yeah, it's one of those.
So you've got like whatever the head is, right? And the you've got a weapon and a coat like that. It was that kind of vibe. And so I was forever just drawing a surprise for those things from the bottom of the deck. And it actually, I think it helped as much as it hindered.
Sure.
Let's say that. Yeah. So that was a fun thing. I just loved the pieces as well. Like, the level of detail on them was kind of phenomenal. Like, even just the fact that, and this is such a low bar perhaps, but the fact that the djinn had a front side and a back side rather than it just being identical on each
side.
Yeah. So like, they had, like, some of them were very muscly, so they had very well defined, like, you know, lats and delts and all kinds of things. I was like, well, goodness.
Yeah, the boss djinn as well are like slightly bigger and slightly buffer than the rest as well. They're these like huge silver djinn that kind of stand out from the rest, looking real hench.
Yeah, and the fact that, like, yeah, you've got these corks that you need to place on the things as well, and you've got your mages with their staves wandering around the city, like, yeah, it was so much that was just really pleasing and also unique to that game.
Yes. I think it uses its setting really well. And I think it marries its setting with its gameplay very well as well. It's like really cohesive. You know, it's this game about all these djinn have been sort of unleashed on the town, and you've got to go around and collect them all. And the way that you're going to be doing that is sort of by, you know, maybe you'll be the person who hires a bunch of extra mages to help you, or maybe you'll go away into your laboratory and do some research and you'll come out with some, you know, incredible set of gear that's going to make you the ultimate djinn hunter. I think it's really sweet. And I think there is also a really lovely rub in the way that the board is this town that gets randomized at the start of every game, means that when you are first placing your people down, when you are first sort of setting off on your journey round this board, you're sort of plotting a course through the town. And that also gets sort of like mildly messed up by the fact that when other people are stood in a space, you have to pay them to access that space. There's no blocking, but there's just that mild inconvenience that some of those sort of more parallel play style Euro games have, that doesn't like sort of trample all over the game and make it this really like mean and bitey and nasty thing, but just one where you can get a little bit over on your opponents. It's like, hey, oh, we're all trying to hunt these djinn here, but I'm gonna do it a little bit better than you.
And like, also just the way that the cardboard slots together is pretty great as well.
Yeah.
Like, so you've got your player board, and you've already mentioned that there are spaces for different things to slot into, but there's also a section that you pull out to slot into the top of a secret like archive space, so that you can then start using a different track in the archive system. And it's just it's like, just the amount of moving parts, the way that we're describing it probably sounds intimidating, but because everything feels like it has its place and its home, it actually was quite lovely and intuitive, I would say.
I think that's a really lovely part of, like, I mean, I'm a bit of a sucker for that kind of thing. And I always get frustrated by one of my friends who, when we're playing games, just sort of throws all their components kind of in a rough area around them. And this sounds like I'm actually atting you, because I know that you do that sometimes. You just
How
sort
dare
of
you?
Like...
I will say there is order within what I do, but usually I am fiddling because ADHD. So I am absolutely like building little towers with stuff that might have fallen over when I go and lean and take my turn or something.
You have an internalized system for how you are arranging your pieces, but you are not going to be beholden to the one provided by the game.
Yes, and sometimes you lean over and tidy my things.
I have mostly done that in the digital realm, where it was sort of the barriers of social acceptability were lowered to some extent.
Yeah.
And
Quacks
my virtual
hand,
you know, might have sort of made the pieces, you know, aligned to the grid or something like that, you know, just while I was bored, while I was, you know, shuffling things around. I hope I've not done that in the real world, but maybe I have. I'm that kind of stickler for that kind of thing.
I mean, it hasn't stuck in my brain, if you have. And you know I bear a grudge, so it's
That's
fine.
Very true.
Yeah.
Gin's good. It's nice. We had a nice time playing it. At least I did. I think it's like, you could do a lot worse for Euro games that are relatively quick. Like, it wasn't, I played this at two player, and I think it loses a lot for being two player. I think this is a better with three or four, because you have that, you know, sort of blocking people on the board, and the sort of, it feels a little bit more alive, a little bit more bubbly. But at two, it's very breezy. And I think at four, when you're not teaching the game, it can be pretty quick as well. And I think it's got a really unique theme. It's got really lovely components. And I think that it's good. It's solid. I had a nice time playing it.
Yeah, like, I think something else is just like, it's a lovely thing to crack out and to just have the components and you know, start setting up the thing and just see people fiddling with the player boards and all the other bits, and just like, you know, even while you're sort of doing the rules, you might have to, everyone sit on your hands. You are fiddling. you are clearly enthralled by all the bits that you can push out and turn around and do this with. So I need your attention. Eyes on me. Eyes on me.
That's one of those things where while I was setting up like the main board and like doing the like main admin of the like, you know, setting that up, I gave you the player, everyone their player boards. And it was quite sweet seeing everyone trying to work out where everything went on the board. They were like, oh, and this bit sockets. Oh, and this bit sockets in. Oh, and this is lovely. And then like, yeah. I think there was a nice moment when someone took one of these like little point tiles that you get for when you make a set of three, you get one of these special point tiles that gives you a bonus and it gives you 30 points at the end of the game, which is great. And someone was taking one of those and they just sort of put them on their board just sort of in a random pile, and I was like, no, that's got a home too, you're socking it right there. And everyone, oh, it's very sweet.
The only thing that didn't have a home actually was you had like, I think you have three spaces for the companions that you can pick up, and then you just keep going, you know, towards to the right of the board, and it was like, hang on, what? These people don't have beds. These people don't have, you know, a little apartment.
They're roaming free.
This board, like, how is this?
What's going on? Thank you very much for listening to this latest episode of the Shut Up and Sit Down podcast. We'll be back next week with another episode, as usual, where we'll talk about more games. Probably, we might have a video review out on the site sometime soon. We might have a gift guide out on the site sometime soon. All this and more for people who enjoy board games. Pip, have you got any parting words for the people at home?
I'm just enjoying your specificity.
Yeah, I'm keeping things vague while we're in this sort of, you know, I'm working on a really big project and it just doesn't end. But one day it will.
You are crawling towards the finish line. And I'm waiting here with some Lucozade and a pat on the head.
That would be so good. Can you, I was going to say I've broken my arm. I've not. I've just given myself RSI. And that's what it feels like. I've broken it functionally. And I've broken my brain because I've been looking at the editing screen for so long. And I've not left the flat today or yesterday.
Well, maybe I'll play a skull and then put you out of your misery.
That would be lovely. Thanks for listening.
Bye.